welcome everyone to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We are proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I am very lucky because where I live, we have a Reader's Fest that is put on annually by our county library system. It draws some of the best authors from around the country and sometimes from overseas. This past March, it was my pleasure to meet New York Times bestselling author Karen White, who happened to be sitting next to Lauren Willig. For those of you who don't know, they have written books together along with other female literature writers. But I am so honored to welcome to the air Karen White. Karen, welcome, and it's nice to talk to you again.
Thank you. Yeah, likewise.
How is everything going with you? When I spoke to you a month or so ago, you were still writing bedraggedly with a sprained thumb. We kind of laughed
yes.
about that because I had just broken mine.
Yes.
How is it going? are you pushing along?
It's funny because so Lauren Willig, Beatrice Williams, and I, we
right.
are working on our next collaboration, which is due next month. And we're also working on my next big single title for Penguin, which is due May 1st, which is, yes, like what, 2 weeks away, I think?
I'm working doggedly
on both. Yes, ma'am.
Because
it'll be out in 2020.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, you know, nothing like a deadline to make one's life exciting. So, yeah.
There you go. Dreams uh-huh. of Falling released actually last summer, but you have been so busy writing and touring with this book that it is only now that I've been able to say, please come on my show. Because I have The Glass Ocean, which you generously signed for me, as well as Dreams of Falling. I love
mm-hmm.
Southern women's fiction. I think you call it grit lit.
Yes.
And there is a very distinct style of women's fiction when it involves the South or Low Country or something like that. Tell us what the difference is between grit lit and traditional women's fiction.
I'm gonna let you know that this term I got from Lauren Willig, she calls it the special sauce. You know, and the special sauce is whatever makes something that should be mundane and ordinary and normal, that little something extra. And if we knew what it was, we would copyright it or patent it or whatever. But I think that's, there's something about the South. There's something about, yes, it's hot and humid other places, but maybe it's our history and it's, you know, everything is a little slow moving. There's, you know, when I think Gothic, I think Southern Gothic. I don't think, you know, Victoria Holt. I think,
right.
you know, the skeletons in the attic. It's just, you know, and families, crazy families especially.
Yes.
And I can say
yes.
all this because I come from a very long line of Southerners. So, we embrace our crazies and, you know, that's
yes.
what makes us who we are. There is something about the atmosphere here and the way, you know, people talk and, you know, and the food and the customs and the politeness, it's all part of that special sauce, that makes Southern fiction different. Special. And I think whether you live in the South or not, you can still appreciate it because so much of it is about family and about home and, you know, how you define home and family. And that's, you know, that's, I've always loved Southern writers even before I became one. And that's sort of what I gravitated to. Yes, my family's from the South, but, you know, I didn't live, both my parents are born and raised in Mississippi, but I didn't live in the South until after I married my Yankee husband and we moved down to Atlanta.
Wow.
So, Yeah, so it was just something, and I think it's just because I remember my summer vacations visiting my grandmother in Indianola, Mississippi, and just, you know, you kick off your shoes and go barefoot, and, you know, I always joke, you know, my cousins would all show up, and we'd run downtown Indianola, Mississippi, and, you know, the drugstore owner would like, oh, you're Catherine Ann's girl, and give me a Coca-Cola and a glass bottle, you know, and it was just so different from, you know, we lived in New Jersey for a number of years. My dad worked for Exxon, so he was in New York City. We lived in London for 7 years, in the Netherlands for 3 years. But, you know, my happiest memories and vacations were going back. You know, that was sort of my coming home to me, was coming to Mississippi. And I guess I try to recreate that feeling, that sense of home and belonging in my books.
You mentioned that you come from a long line of storytellers, Southerners anyway. Are your Southern roots in storytelling? Do you recall family passing down, crazy stories or just family history from generation to generation?
You know, yes. You know, nothing official, but I remember sitting under my grandmother's kitchen table, like into the wee hours of the night, listening to my mom and her four sisters and my grandmother and her sister and, like, you know, second cousins and every, you know, all the women of my mother's family, of which there were many, sitting around the table doing their Southern girl talk and, you know, telling stories about people they knew and people they'd grown up with and people they were related to. And I, you know, would sit there for hours. You know, I'd fall asleep on the linoleum floor. You know, just listening to them. And those are the voices I hear when I'm creating my stories. Because there was always, you know, they're not only just their accents, but the way that when they told a story and they'd say something, you understood that there was more to that story just from the way they were saying it. You know?
Sure.
So
the nuance
and
the timbre of their voice and all.
Yes.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
And the hand waving and the descriptions with the hands
all
and
that,
all. It's
yes.
a very unique thing to listen to Southern women talk. It kind of reminds me of that television show with Julia Sugarbaker. You know, I can't remember what the name of it was.
Oh, yeah.
But you know what I'm talking about.
I love that show.
Designing Women.
Designing Women. Yes, that's it. Because it's set in Atlanta,
So evocative of so many of the Southern women I know. And
part of what they were saying wasn't what they were saying. You know, not personally. You know, everything else. Yeah.
Could be a tilt of an arch of an eyebrow or the cock of a head or the wave of a hand.
Or even a bless their heart. You knew exactly what they meant, you know, and they weren't blessing their hearts. Yeah.
No, they sure weren't. So I love the fact that you tell these beautiful interconnected stories about family, because I really, and even though other writers from other parts of the country use family as their baseline, there is something so different about the South. I don't know if included with family and generationally, because, you know, really the South is not as old as someone, like you said, your Yankee husband's history. How did you begin your collaboration with Beatrice and Lauren?
You know, in a true story, we were in a bar, three authors enter a bar. And that's, we were at a writer's conference, and we were, we knew each other. We all wrote for Penguin at the time. And, we, you know, we're just kind of talking about our careers and, you know, books that we loved, and we were fans of each other. And, you know, as the wine bottles and the champagne and the everything else kind of, you know, we were like, we should write a book together. And then when we sobered up, you know, we thought, you know, we should write a book together. And I think that's something the three of us, we all like challenges. You know, we were all very comfortable in our own careers and doing well. You know, we were all New York Times bestselling authors. And so this is something we didn't have to do. But it's been one of the best parts of my career so far, and I hope, I think, Beatrice and Lauren feel the same way, because it re-energizes our own writing. And, you know, mm-hmm. right now I'm a little crazy because I'm working on my own book. So when the manuscript, you know, because we write round robin, so when the manuscript hits my computer and it's my turn to turn in a chapter, I have to push my book aside. But then when I get back to my book, I'm re-energized. Like my thought process is just so much clearer. It's like, I call it my productive procrastination. Because sometimes you get tired of your book, or not tired of it. You're just like, oh my gosh, I just can't look at this one more minute. And then you start writing on another book, and then you go back to it and you see it with fresh eyes. And it really, and Beatrice and Lauren say the same thing. It's been a really good thing.
How in the world, I mean, I've spoken to authors who collaborate with one other author or someone who contributes a short story to an anthology, but how do three women with various backgrounds and writing styles come together and make a book work like that? Because I've read your books that you read together, that you do together, and they're magnificent. They're wonderful. The Glass Ocean was one of my favorites that came out last September. It was just a lot of fun. How do you do that? What is the process of that type of a storytelling?
You know, and it's we look at each other sometimes like, how did we do this, and how are we doing it for a third time? You know, and it's funny because we're all sort of seat of the pants writers, but when we write these books, we outline it. So we get together, we outline the book, we each pick a character or time period, and then we go to our respective corners of the world and just then start writing round robin. And, you know, there's a lot of texting, and then actually they're going to join me at my house in Florida in a few weeks, 3 weeks, in a month. So we have a month to finish the book. Oh my gosh.
Okay.
And we will do the final edits and then send it to our editor. It will be done.
Wow. Is it a toin cost that you decide on what the timeline is or the setting for the story?
You know,
story?
It's very organic. It's very organic, you know, like throughout the year, I mean, we are texting each other constantly, and we'll say, oh my gosh, did you, you know, we'll send like a story or something that we find and, you know, the news or whatever. Oh my gosh, this is such an interesting thing. And then we start, oh my gosh, we need to, you know, include something like this in our next book. So we're always gathering story ideas. So when we get together to actually start outlining, we start brainstorming, and the cool thing about our brainstorming, it's not like one person comes up with an idea and then the other person comes out with another idea. It's like a person comes up with an idea and the next person builds on it, and the next person builds on that. And so I can't see this process working with anybody else. I call it magic what we do. It really is a magical process. It's pretty unbelievable.
It is actually a magical process. I don't know that. I don't know how many people could do that, and you know,
oh,
not
I agree.
Lose their
and we
mind.
Don't. There's no conflict. I agree. There's no conflict. We and I say it's an element of trust. I know that they're great writers. I don't need to go back and edit what they're doing or second guess what they're doing, because I know that they're fabulous writers. And I don't worry about it. I only worry about my chapters. And that's it. And then we end up with, you know, a fabulous book that we're very, very proud of.
Do you sit down and read the end product before you turn it in to see how it all coalesces?
And for both my single titles, like Dreams of Falling, was the same way. I write the book, I send it in, and then when it comes back for edits, then I will read it all through. But once I'm done with the editing process and the galley edits for all of my books, I'm done. I don't read it again, because once it's turned in, it's done. I don't want to see it again.
Are you surprised by how the stories turn out when the three of you write together?
No. It's
really?
Because we all write dual timeline books. So it's, So we're familiar with the process. We're familiar how it all kind of comes together. Glass Ocean is 1915 in modern day, and Dreams of Falling is 1950s in modern day. And by the way, there's a connection between the two. I don't know if you caught it.
Yes, I did.
My character
I didn't want to say
in Dreams of Falling, go see a movie.
I didn't want to say anything.
So we do that. We put little red herrings in every book that kind of connect our standalones with our collaborations. So that really makes it fun.
I want to talk a little bit about you and growing up. You said you were raised in a house full of brothers, which I can relate to.
Sadly, yes.
I did too. Oh my gosh, they're enough to make you crazy. Where were you in the pecking order?
I was third.
Ah. Okay.
So
I was
we were
first.
Boom, boom, boom. And then eight years later, my little brother was born.
You had a brother, right?
Yes. That my parents told me it was going to be a girl, and they bought me matching twin canopy beds.
Oh, no. Boy,
so
were they ever wrong.
You can only imagine the tears. Yeah.
Sure.
So I called him Stephanie and dressed him up in my doll clothes until he was old enough to fight back. And
oh, no.
Yeah, he's totally okay now. I don't know how much therapy he needed, but he's happily married with children of his own now. So.
Good. I'm so glad. Poor thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting to me. You've always liked to read. I think I read somewhere that someone stuck a library book in your hand and you started reading Nancy Drew. And that
mm-hmm,
was your introduction
to
books.
Mm-hmm.
But as much as you loved to read, you didn't know that you wanted to write.
Until after you got out of school.
Until
I had kids and all of that kind of thing, because I hated to write as a kid. I hated to write, and it wasn't until I learned how to type that I understood why. It's because when I was handwriting everything, you know, back in the old days, you know, you handwrote everything, and it was I would be so frustrated because I'd have this great idea and I'd start handwriting it and I'd lose half of it by the time I got to the second paragraph because my story in my head would be on, you know, the third chapter. And I just found writing extremely frustrating and not something I wanted to do, you know. And then I learned how to type, and I'm a really good typist because I've played piano my whole life. My hand-eye coordination is pretty good. I didn't want to write. That was not – and it was
so
just,
funny.
You know, after I was a stay-at-home mom, I'm like, oh, my teacher's always telling me I should be a writer. And so that's what I did, you know, and I just sat down and started writing a book because I'm an idiot, you know, like how hard can this be? Well,
right.
You know, yeah, I've learned since, and it's very hard.
But here you are, at least 24 books later, your books are translated into 15 languages. I can't even name 15 languages. You know, you've got millions of books out in the world there. And by the way, I play piano also. Sorry, I used to. So
okay.
I understand. Mm-hmm. We're definitely, you know, sisters from another mister. I'm certain of it. And I wasn't born in the South. I was born in Miami, which is, you know, not really the South. It's just geography.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I do have a brother in Atlanta. Anyway, mm-hmm. I want to talk about Dreams of Falling because this book is so unique and so special. Will you tell our listeners a little bit about what makes Dreams of Falling such a lovely book and why you wrote it?
Oh, why? Why did I write it? You know, one of the original ideas, how I got the original idea was visiting I remember my mother graduated from high school in 1952.
Wow.
And I remember, she had four younger sisters. So, you know, in the 50s, and they all went, you know, these beautiful parties and dances. And my grandmother, I remember visiting my grandmother in Mississippi, and my grandmother kept every single party dress that my mom and my aunts wore, all the crinolines, the gloves.
Wow.
And my, you know, they did cotillion and stuff like that. And, you know, so as a little girl going in, it was, you know, dress up, you know, fantasy world, and all with that
Hello?
Time period, you know, what it was like, you know, being a teenager in the 50s, I thought, oh my gosh, I think, you know, my mom telling me stories about what it was really like, you know, how when it was, you know, when they first got their time of the month. My grandmother would write a note on a piece of paper, fold it over, and my mother would go to the drugstore and she'd pass that note across the counter, and the chemist would, you know, put her Kotex or whatever in a paper bag and close it up and then slide it over to my mom. And, you know, and I'm just like, my gosh, wow, times have really changed. And I just remember, you know, and that really wasn't that long ago, if you think about it.
No, it really wasn't. Yeah.
Yeah, and so my mom, you know, I wanted to write a story about girls, you know, growing up in a protected environment in the South in the 50s. And, you know, what happens when a girl gets in trouble? And I just, I just had so much fun with that element of it. And, of course, I had to put a mystery in there. And I had to put Myrtle Beach in it because I discovered a book called Lost Myrtle Beach, which is pictures of everything that doesn't exist anymore in Myrtle Beach. Because I'm, you know, a card-carrying member of the National Trust. And Myrtle Beach was, like, a really cool place before it became, you know, a spring break mecca for a bunch of college students. It was, you know, they had – it was just a really neat place. And I thought, oh my gosh, I've got to recreate that in a book. And so that's where the whole 50s element came from. And then, you know, modern day, I don't know. You know, I like a character with lots of flaws and weaknesses and something that she has to get over. I don't like perfect heroines. So that's kind of where the modern day story came from.
I'll tell you what.
Generations of women in the same family is also very appealing. So we have that as well.
This story grabbed me when you started talking about the girls who wrote down their dreams and put them into the tree trunk. It's a very sister, best friend thing to do when you're young. You know, you had your little things that you did with each other, you know, that, and I did that with the girls in my neighborhood, particularly. You told secrets, you kept each other's secrets and all. And so it was really evocative of my own childhood.
I think girls from any generation can relate to that. Yeah.
I wonder, are they the same now? When I think of kids, you know, bullying and everything else, I think, what a horrible way to grow up in school. It's so different from when I was
in social media has destroyed all of that, I'm afraid. I was lucky. My daughter was born in 92. So she was still part of that generation before cell phones and social media that she grew up. And I know she and her best friend, you know, they had the little necklace, you know, that said best friend. And
one
friend had half the necklace and she had the other.
Right.
You know,
right.
I don't know if they do that anymore, because I really think, you know, and maybe this is making me sound like an oldie, but honestly, I think social media has stolen so much from our children. That I don't know if we can ever recover.
It does seem girls and boys are socialized differently nowadays. They really are.
Do they have sleepovers anymore where they whisper secrets across the bunk beds? Or I don't know, because everybody's texting everything, you know, and I don't know.
I understand
kind of a
that
sad thing. Yeah,
I do. I understand.
Because that was a happy part of my childhood, a very happy
part.
As
was mine as well. Absolutely. You know, Karen, tell everyone where they can find you on the webs, please. We discussed briefly in the green room how beautiful your website is. Give everyone your information, please.
Sure. My website is karen-white.com. I'm also on Facebook as author Karen White. I'm on Twitter as Karen White Writes, and Instagram, I believe, is also Karen White Writes. But if you go to my website, it has the link to all of my social media on the homepage.
It does indeed. And as a matter of fact, you'll find links for Karen's newsletter. You'll find where to join her ambassadors, who are her readers. Her appearances are there. You're on. What else did you want to add? I want to make sure I cover you everywhere.
I was just
going to
say that on I have a Pinterest page, and if you want to get an idea of what Georgetown, South Carolina looks like, which is where Dreams of Falling is set, as well as Myrtle Beach from the 1950s, to really get a visual of what you're reading about in the book, definitely go to my Pinterest page. And because all of my books have their own Pinterest page, so you'll just click on the one for Dreams of Falling to get a good visual.
And it's beautiful. There is so much history there. The RC Cola and the Moon Pie are some of my favorites.
Yes.
That's taken me back, too.
Yeah, me too. My gosh, yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. Karen White, it has just been an honor and a pleasure to speak with you again.
Thank you.
I hope you'll come back when you release your next book, even if the three of you come on. That would be kind of fun to have you all on together. And
it would be, if you can get us to shut up ever. We're very chatty when we're together.
I can't imagine that, really.
No.
Friends, this is Karen White. She's a New York Times bestselling author. The current book is called Dreams of Falling, but you can also go and look on Amazon for the list of her or on her website of all the books that she's written and co-written. It was lovely to speak to you again, Karen. Thank you so much for being with me tonight.
Too.
And I wish you all the success. Thank you. And thank you, listeners. And thank you, Mom and Dad. I'll see you later.